Hello again, big thinkers, and welcome to this week's episode, where I interview Howard Chang, the CEO of Just Boardrooms and the Turn Lab. I was so inspired by Howard and his thoughtfulness in this conversation. I think you'll really appreciate his business insight around remote work, artificial intelligence, and the future of business. We also talked about his personal health journey and how that shaped him as a leader. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So without further ado, here is the Thinks Out Loud interview with Howard Chang. Welcome to Thinks Out Loud, your source for all the digital expertise your business needs. Howard Chang, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. You've got just an incredible background. You've done an enormous amount of things. I mean, I'm just reading off the list here. You know, retail, product design, sports marketing, film and stills production, commercial real estate, advertising, and digital technology. You're currently the founder and chairman of the Turn Lab and CEO and founder of Just Boardrooms. So you've done a lot over the course of your career. You've got a broad background in how digital has sort of affected the workplace, how AI is affecting the workplace, how technology has affected the workplace, and ultimately how that affects the people in the workplace. So, you know, just to open it up with a big question, we're talking a lot about hybrid work. We're talking about a lot about the future of work. We're talking a lot about how AI might affect work. What's going on? You know, what are we seeing that, you know, interests you and you find particularly exciting?
Well, you didn't start with a softball question, Tim. So and
I told you we were going to dive right in, right?
I love it. Yeah, I mean, you hear the term the future of work, and I think everyone sort of has an interpretation of what that might mean for their organization. So whether you're working for a company or leading a company, there's probably more questions than answers at the moment. We do a lot of consulting to C-suite leaders, and we talk to them a lot around company culture, morale, productivity, innovation. And there is a general agreement right now that no one's really got it quite figured out in terms of how are we actually maximizing our people's productivity, how are we maximizing their ability to collaborate and bring value to a company to help product service development, et cetera. But also, how do we retain people in an environment where sometimes they're working remotely through a pinhole call Zoom or Teams, which is very difficult to build morale and culture.
Yeah, so sure.
So many pieces of the puzzle, and of course AI fits into all of this, right? Because if you think about AI strictly as a productivity tool, you know, how it's used, if it's used, can dramatically impact how an individual performs and how a company performs. And if it's used badly or not used at all, some companies might be left behind. And so there's all of that kind of going on right now. So we're spending a lot of time in the learning phase. There are some published articles now by Harvard Business Review, Forbes, et cetera. They're all kind of weighing in. But no one really is the expert in the space because it's happening in real time.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. So one of my favorite quotes, there's this French philosopher, people who've heard the show before have heard me say this before, but I'm not a big reader of French philosophers, but somehow I ran across this quote that when you build the ship, you build the shipwreck. And, you know, the point being that ideally the value of the ship outweighs the negatives of the shipwreck, but we also have to acknowledge that there are those risks and we have to think around them. So obviously there's a lot of talk about the positives of remote work. There's a lot of talk about, you know, people working remotely and everything. What are some of the downsides? What are some things people need to be concerned about or thinking about there?
Well, so to give you an idea, you know, our company, the Turn Lab, has about 50 people, all knowledge workers. We work hybrid. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the office a couple of days a week, and we're remote most of the days a week. So we've done our own surveys and workshopping around what's the best model. But I also think that there's larger studies afoot right now. Like Microsoft published a study, I think about 18 months ago, that looked at tens of thousands of workers across their global offices. And they looked at groups that were predominantly in office and groups that were predominantly remote. And they were really doing it initially to measure productivity. Like, is there a productivity difference? They did notice a productivity difference, but it wasn't as big as they thought. What actually surprised them was that the in-office group had much higher rankings in terms of product innovation and product quality. So by coming together in person, they were able to collaborate more, argue more, debate more, challenge each other more, which led to better product design, better product development. So productivity is only just one piece of the puzzle. And there are studies that are showing for some companies, the productivity can be actually quite large, up to like 30% for some companies, because a lot of new people coming to the workforce, no one really taught them how to do time management, as an example, right? So how do we close that gap? We're not going to bring everybody back in the office all the time. So how do we close that gap is the big question people are trying to answer.
Yeah, makes sense. And I know in some of the discussions we'd had, you know, there have been some mental health issues and the like that some folks are concerned about.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a mental health issue that's growing called belonging deficit, right? As people felt isolated during COVID, they weren't part of physical communities and, you know, stuck in that tiny little channel called social media, you can actually feel more socially isolated because you feel like you're missing out on everything, right? So
yeah, sure,
so the belonging deficit is a big issue for remote workers, even hybrid workers. But what belonging deficit is also leading to is something called collaboration deficit. So as people are feeling like my work is really starting to get really isolated and I'm starting to feel really alone in my work, that's also creating mental health issues, not to mention ultimately the quality of other work. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. And here's the other really dangerous thing that's happening.
Yeah.
With the advancement of AI and the ability for AI to generate content for a lot of knowledge work, the work that we do sitting on our own is going to be more easily replaced by AI than the work we do together as teams. So that natural creativity, innovation, that's the kind of knowledge work that's going to be continued to be led by human beings. The sit at home typing out, I got to write an article on cryptocurrency, I have to do some analytics on a research study. AI is going to do all of that, right?
Sure.
The interesting thing is that there's also anxiety from people going, ooh, how am I going to keep my job with all of this coming in? I think the key here is people need to come together in ways that make sense for moments that matter, probably in person, so that they can create amplification and acceleration of what humans are actually good at, which tends to be creativity, innovation, problem solving, something that they currently do much better than AI.
No, that makes so much sense. I mean, some of the things you're talking about there, the belonging deficit, listeners of the show have heard me talk about a book by a real good friend of mine, Mark Schaefer, called Belonging to the Brand, where he talks about how community is the next great marketing channel and the like. And it sounds like you're talking about the same thing from a product innovation perspective, from a serendipity perspective, right? The random collisions of people that lead to observations or insights you might not have had before, well, right?
And you might live longer. Like if you watch the Netflix show, The Blue Zone, you know, it's so interesting how if you look at all the Blue Zone communities that the host studied, almost all of them had one commonality, which was community. So whether that was the Seventh-day Adventists with their community built around their religion, or whether that was the Okinawan grannies that got together, you know, every day to cook together, knit together, sew quilt, you know, that idea of bringing people together in person for moments that matter is incredible for not just our mental health, but also our physical health and longevity. So there's a lot of science behind the need to be social animals.
Absolutely. So I thought we would get to this later, but this seems like a natural touch point right now. You know, you've talked a lot about in your career the force of business for, you know, business as a force for good and the impacts that we make on the world in a positive way as a business, right? If I can invert that quote I said before, let's talk about the ship maybe a bit and not the shipwreck. You know, let's hear some of what you think there.
Yeah, you know, listen, I'm an entrepreneur, right? I started my first business at 20 and I've done very well. So, you know, I am not going to be someone who is a hater of capitalism. I would like to think that I am a, you know, socially conscious, environmentally conscious business leader. So what we've done is we've actually taken some of these socially conscious, environmentally, you know, ideas, philosophies, and put them into practice by applying for and getting certified as a B Corp, so a benefit corporation. So
the
B Corp movement, it's growing, still small, but you know, members include like Patagonia, Ben & Jerry's, you know, companies that believe that it's not all about the shareholders, right? It's not only about the bottom line. These tend to be kind of like triple bottom line companies, and we're one of them. We're a certified B Corp. We've been since 2018. It's a rigorous process. There is something on the B Corp website called a quick assessment that you can go in as a company to see, you know, how big a gap is it between what you do and what a B Corp subscribes to. So that's a good starting point. But what I like about the B Corp movement is it kind of quantifies and systematizes the idea of being a good corporate citizen, right? So it looks at things like worker health and equity. It looks at things like environmentalism, health of the planet, but also looks at things like giving back to the community, supporting underserved communities. So these are things that are all important. And I think the big flip for me was when I read the term stakeholders versus shareholders.
Right.
So, you know, Tim, you've talked to enough business people. We always talk about our shareholders. But what B Corps are trying to do and what we're trying to do is actually there's a larger group of stakeholders involved, right? There's our customers. There's our staff. There's the communities we serve. There's the environment, biodiversity. They're all stakeholders. Like, it'd be very hard to run a business if we had no biodiversity, as an example. What if all the bees disappear? We are screwed, basically, right? So I think it's really shifting perspective and understanding that if we account more for stakeholders, we might be able to do good as we do well. And I think that's a great combo.
Right. Well, and what you're talking about with you know, the mental health situation with employees or things along those lines, right? The anxiety that they feel around the artificial intelligence potentially taking their job, or the belonging deficit when they're working remote and not connecting with other people. That's not going to make for happy, healthy, functional employees. Those folks are also representative of the people who buy from our companies and the like, and it probably doesn't make for happy, healthy, functional consumers. So, yeah. I mean, I've thought about this from a very different perspective over the course of my career, and I agree with everything you said, so I don't want any of this to sound like I'm disagreeing. It's also, at a worst-case scenario, and you know, folks who've listened to the show have heard me say this before, if you're not doing well in your community, you're not creating an environment where people want to work with you or want to buy from you or will need your thing. So even if you don't believe in some of these principles, though I would argue you should, it sounds like you would argue you should, it's also in your best interest to do it because it's in your best interest to do it.
Yeah. I mean, right. 87% of millennials and Gen Z who apply for a job want to know the values of the company. 87%. So it's a huge piece around not just corporate culture, but in terms of talent acquisition, talent retention. If you don't stand for something, people have a hard time connecting their value strictly to a paycheck. And
yeah,
I think people are looking for more than that right now. Sorry about the fire. I live in the big city, so, you know, fire lines, you know, sirens, it happens.
No worries. That's no problem at all. So just continuing on the discussion. So it sounds like when we talk about things like remote work, or when we look at things like the future of work, you know, hybrid isn't in your view, that's not a fad. That's a thing that's going to exist for a long time. People are going to need that balance of, we're not going fully remote ever. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. This is more, a friend of mine likes to say, I think I heard what you thought you said, right? So we're probably not going full remote because of the downsides that exist there. We're also probably not going back to everybody in the office 5 days a week, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Or how do you see this playing out?
I think that's right, and there's a nuance to that. So one of the things that we're observing as we're studying the space is that it's becoming a little bit more of a hub and spoke model. So people aren't necessarily wanting to drive from their home in the suburbs all the way downtown to meet with their team for 3 hours. They've done a 3-hour commute round trip just to get that 3-hour meeting in. So one of the reasons why we launched our latest startup, Just Boardrooms, which we launched in March, it's essentially a Airbnb for professional meeting spaces. So we're just a marketplace, right? So, you know, for instance, Tim, if you had an office and you had a boardroom, you can put your boardroom on and rent it by the hour, by the day to a user.
Yep.
So that's an example.
Yep.
So we get a lot of usage in our system in the suburbs. So we poll our users and go, like, why did you use your boardroom? We said, well, you know what? It was close to work to where me and my client lived. Oh, yeah. Our team lives on the west end of the city, so it didn't make sense for us to drive downtown. We met out here. So they're happy to pay $50 an hour or whatever for a boardroom on demand because it actually makes them more productive. They save 2 hours on the commute, they get more done, and they only use it when they need it. So this hub and spoke type situation is we're seeing more and more of that. You know, as the downtowns are a little bit emptier now than they used to be, what's happening is work is happening elsewhere. But what I do see is the really smart companies are looking at ways to bring their people together more often and to make it as easy as possible for that to happen because they see the benefit of doing it.
Right, right. And I want to come back to that point just for a second, but just as you're talking about your company a little bit, where are you located? Like, where can people find you?
We're in Toronto, fourth largest city in North America. I know that's surprising for a lot of Americans, but you know, our clients are all over North America. So what the Turn Lab is, the Turn Lab is a marketing technology lab and incubator. So we do traditional marketing, market research, we do planning, we do media campaigns, but we also do a lot of technology. So all our software engineers are in-house. They're not offshore in India, they're here. We build, you know, million-dollar enterprise digital commerce sites. We also build apps for startups. So one of the products we developed was Just Boardroom. So that's one of our proof products as an example, right?
Got it.
So we're an incubator, and we've helped other startups incubate as well. So we are based in Toronto, and you can check us out at theturnlab.com. And I definitely suggest you check out our marketplace, Just Boardrooms. It's justboardrooms.com. You know, the sharing economy is going to be another big piece of the future of work, right? As we start thinking about reducing friction, as we think about collaboration, there's going to be a lot of assets right now, commercial real estate assets, transportation assets that have been all geared towards coming back to the office that aren't going to be used for coming back to the office. So the sharing economy is going to play a much bigger role in that, not just in, you know, Canada. You know, we have 55 cities for Just Boardrooms. Most of them are in the States. So the U.S. is really growing quickly, and I think that's something that's going to happen for every major and minor market is we're going to do things differently.
That makes total sense. Well, and what I love about it specifically, first of all, I think it's a cool product. I think it's a cool idea. I also love that you're putting your money where your mouth is, right? You're talking about all of this in terms of these are the trends we see happening. You build digital experiences. You build commerce experiences. Hey, let's put these two things together and actually show this in practice, right?
Yeah, I love burning my own money. Like it's like a dumpster fire in the back of my office. Like, let's just throw more money at a startup because I'm a glutton for punishment. But you know what? The good news is it's growing quickly. So, you know, we're at 250 locations now. Sales are growing in double digits, compounded month over month. So it's all good. But the truth of the matter is I've been a startup guy since I was 20 years old. I've played a lot of risks as we do it. You have to have an appetite for risk if you're going to do a startup.
Absolutely. And we'll give you a chance to say this again at the end, but just for folks who've heard this bit.
The turnlab.com and justboardrooms.com.
So, you know, one of the things that I find particularly fascinating about your story is that, you know, you just said you have to have an appetite for risk as an entrepreneur. You obviously, you like to burn your own money doing this, right? You like to have fun doing this and finding new challenges and all. But you've gone through a personal challenge. Like, you're a recent cancer survivor.
That's,
you know,
right.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. In 2017, I was diagnosed with relatively advanced prostate cancer. And part of it was because I sat on my hands and, you know, did the usual guy thing and say, well, you know, I'm going to delay dealing with this as long as possible. So sure. My tumor was about 2/3 of my prostate. So it was relatively advanced. So when I talked to the local urologist, you know, very good urologist at great hospitals here, and we have universal healthcare, by the way, so I don't have to pay for it. So it was all free healthcare. I talked to the best specialists and they gave me a bunch of options. And frankly, I didn't love the options. So I did my own research. I am a very curious guy and I'm more than capable of doing, you know, using that thing called Google. I'm not sure whether you heard about it, but I ended up finding a clinic in Germany that was doing a very innovative surgery called IRE NanoKnife. And I would say if anyone listening has anybody in their family that is going through localized prostate cancer, in other words, it has not metastasized, it's localized prostate,
sure.
definitely check out something called the Vitis Prostate Clinic in Offenbach, Germany. So they have a procedure called IRE NanoKnife that stands for irreversible electroporation. It's what they call a focal therapy. Hopefully I'm not getting too personal here, but the bottom line is—
That's okay,
is
I asked the question, it's okay.
There's a lot of side effects to traditional radical prostatectomy. So the NanoKnife is a whole different system where they basically, using MRIs and other technology, they isolate the tumor and they basically zap it with high voltage for nanoseconds. That's why it's called NanoKnife. So I had full recovery. They got rid of my tumor. After 3 weeks, I was good as new, and I was great for 5 years. And then 2 years ago, my cancer came back. So I had to deal with that. So they spotted three tumors in what was left of my prostate. I'm at that age now where that could absolutely happen.
Absolutely. Sure.
And so I had to figure out, well, what am I going to do? Am I going back to Germany, pay for surgery, go through the recovery process again? And I decided to actually talk to a naturopathic oncologist who specializes in cancer, alternative cancer treatments. She works with regular oncologists, she works with hospitals, but she does a lot of complementary treatments. There's something called high-dose vitamin C IV, which is basically an IV, very high-dose vitamin C, which has been shown in clinical trials to slow down or even reverse the trend of cancer in breast and prostate cancer. So I started doing that, changed my diet, and crazy thing, Tim, after 18 months of doing this, all my tumors went away.
Wow.
So
wow.
This is part, I share the story, not because I want to give you the gruesome details in prostate cancer. I want to share with you my core philosophy in life and business, which I think drives me as an entrepreneur, but what makes our company so successful and powerful. A lot of companies in the knowledge space are focused on selling their solution. Mm-hmm. We are focused on falling in love with the problem. So, with that philosophy, our job at the Turn Lab, for instance, and how I operate personally is I don't even want to talk solution. In fact, the solution may actually not even be anything I sell. I want to first deeply understand the problem. That's why we do leverage AI in our company. We do have analysts and strategists and market researchers in our company. Unlike a lot of traditional marketing firms, we invest in that space because having evidence to inform the right strategy to build the right solution has been our path to success. And I think a lot of people forget about that and they get so in love with their solution that they're just kind of ramming it down people's throat whether they need it or not. So sorry, that was a long-winded, very, you know, convoluted way to get to that point, but it came through cancer.
Well, that's okay. I mean, that's what podcasts are for, right? That's for us to have a conversation and kind of work our way around to the thing. It's really funny you say that. We are very fond of the expression around here that a problem well defined is half solved.
Yes.
Right? Rather than starting with a solution and how do we, you know, try to apply the solution to a range of problems, it is very much understand the problem, understand what the challenge is, and then talk about how does that, you know, what can be done to solve it rather than start with the solution and go looking for problems that it might whack-a-mole, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's interesting to me, you know, you've had a couple of, I would say, fairly substantial health scares. I don't think that's an unfair way to state that, right?
Yeah.
And the like. And you also talk about, you know, creating these environments where people can work more productively, where people can come together, where they can, you know, do better work, how they can contribute to their communities and things along those lines. I'm personally very curious about this. You know, is there a relationship there? Were you always in that view, or did your health challenges kind of lead you in that direction, or was it sort of just a little bit of both?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I founded and ran a very successful integrated ad agency for about 20 years. So that started in the 90s, and, you know, we had great clients. You know, we had Callaway Golf, we had Honda. It was great. It was like 55 people, good kind of mid-sized boutique shop. But, you know, in the kind of like mid-20 teens, like 2015, 2016, I really started feeling like we were becoming more the hands for our clients than thought partners, right?
Yeah.
And I thought the idea of an integrated ad agency was becoming a lot more commoditized, right? And what I found interesting is that my clients started to be meeting with companies like PwC and Deloitte and Accenture on their marketing strategy, I thought was really interesting. Yeah. So the consultancies were starting to occupy the space. So I was thinking about it for a while. I was thinking about how do we deal with it. And I will tell you right now, cancer made me make a move. So what I did is I actually shut down that company to start the Turn Lab. So I shut down a successful 20-year multi-million dollar agency and started with a handful of intrepid people that were willing to bet on my bet to do this kind of consultancy-led marketing technology model. And oh my God, Tim, we stubbed our toes so many times in the beginning. Like, we didn't quite get it right. We couldn't get our proposition right. But after about 18 months to 2 months to 2 years, we started seeing momentum happening. We saw people kind of hiring us for the right reasons, not to be their hands, but to be thought partners. And now we're bigger than I ever was as an integrated agency with, you know, about 50 staff now, higher revenues. And I think the model's working. You know, I like to tell people we're a lab, which means you can break some beakers. That's what, you know, we stubbed our toes, but just don't burn down the lab, right? Like, so we want to do it right, but we're going to make mistakes along the way and we're going to learn. Yeah. My background, I've been a competitive athlete a lot in my life, and I've coached elite athletes. And I would say that the most impressive characteristic of any great athlete I've ever met is just resilience. You know, we're going to keep stumbling. We're going to keep skinning our knees, but are you able and willing to get up and go and keep going? That I think is key to any for any entrepreneur, but really for any business leader or someone who's trying to progress in their profession.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I mean, I don't want to trivialize, you know, your health situation by any stretch. I unfortunately have as listeners to the show know, I've got a cancer history in my family, so it's something that I've been close to a lot. You know, and I think that there's a lot to be said there of just getting up every day and dealing with whatever it is, you know, is the difference between folks who are successful, who would deem themselves successful. I mean, forget what society says, but, you know, you have gotten to where you want to get or things along those lines because you chose to just keep trying, right? Even if it knocks you back a little bit, you know, setbacks are temporary. They don't stop you.
Yeah, and I think anytime we hit an existential crisis in our lives, it provides clarity, right?
So you
start thinking, well, I only have X number of days. Like sometimes we think, oh, our life goes on forever. But when you have these moments, you go, well, actually, no. I played most of the cards in my deck already. I only have so many left. And so you start thinking, well, how am I going to play them? Those questions come into mind. Yeah. And so it definitely provides a lot of clarity.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I think very inspiring for people to hear in terms of you know, if you're going through a rough time, you know, this will probably pass. And it's, you know, all you can do is just put one foot in front of the other and kind of work towards whatever the next objective is, right?
For sure. And surround yourself with good people, right?
Absolutely.
I would say, you know, as an entrepreneur who started at 20 and built a multi-million dollar business in my 20s, I would say the biggest mistake I made as a young entrepreneur is I thought I was the smartest kid in the room. And so I didn't look for enough advice from smart people around me. Yeah. And I would say my success now is I'm really good at identifying smart, aligned, talented people and put them on the right seats of the bus. I you know, it takes a village to create anything, and I think business is no exception. Even if you're working for a company, look at the team around you and look at how you can impact making sure you have the right people around you, right? So I think it's really important to surround yourself with supporters that are aligned and that can amplify, you know, who you are and what you bring to the table.
Yeah, yeah, so much. I told you when we were starting off, you know, I've been consulting for a little over a dozen years, and it's so funny. I always think that one of my great failings was, you know, in jobs that I'd had prior is you want to be the smart person in the room. You want to ask really smart questions. One of the things I love about being a consultant is you're allowed to ask the dumbest questions in any room, right? You learn so much when you just ask things that you don't have to look smart. People think, you know, oh, that's a really interesting question because I never thought about it that way when you ask things that sound really dumb at first.
I'm going to do a shout out to a buddy of mine. His name is Steve.
Please.
His name is Stephen Bebas. He is a CEO coach, and you can, you know, check him out on LinkedIn. He was one of my first major clients, and he brought Home Depot into Canada, and he launched this incredible big box golf concept called Golf Town. And I worked with him for 12 years, helping him build it into a $400 million retail company. And I couldn't figure him out at first, because he'd be the guy in the room asking the dumbest questions. And I was like, what's going on with this guy? Because he's obviously successful. He's obviously smart. And then I realized, no, that's actually his superpower. He would ask the questions that everybody felt embarrassed to ask, and he got to the truth way faster. And so I do think that we let ego get in the way a lot when it comes to you know, how we perform. And I think the ability to ask the obvious or dumb question is actually a bit of a superpower.
Well, and especially, right, if your bonus at the end of the quarter or at the end of the year depends upon it, right? Not asking the dumb question, right? You want to look like the smart person in the room,
right?
Because there's a lot of incentives to look like the smart person in the room. Yeah,
right.
For sure. That's great. It's great advice in terms of being willing to ask, surrounding yourself with smart people. I just love the stuff we're talking about here, Howard. And I know we're coming near to the time we have together, but, I just kind of want to put a button on this. You know, you're talking about how we get people to belong more effectively. You're talking about how we bring people together more effectively. I love this focus on the triple bottom line and having some larger purpose to actually appeal to the folks you want working with you and the like. If you're going to attract smart people, it probably makes some sense to focus on things that those smart people might care about beyond just a paycheck, right? And this idea of building a community and building opportunities for moments that matter. So if people want to learn more about what you do and your companies and the like, where can they go? How can they find you?
Yeah, so definitely go to theturnlab.com to check us out. You can email me at Howard and then the letter C at theturnlab.com. I'm happy to field any questions anybody might have. I am still on X, a little reluctantly, but still on X. I'm at AdCycle, A-D-Cycle. I'm an avid cyclist and so therefore AdCycle. And also just check me out on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to have a productive conversation around life, work, and what I would call the human condition.
I love it. Howard, before I let you go, there's one last question I always like to end with. I always like to ask people, you know, is there something I haven't asked you that I should have? Is there something you'd love a chance to, you know, kind of share with the folks we're talking to today?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that keeps me up at night is all the division that's happening in society right now. So whether that's political division, religious division, I mean, you look at what's happening globally right now in Gaza, what's happening both in Canada and the U.S. in terms of political division and the idea of, you know, dogma fighting dogma, whether you're a liberal or a conservative. And I do think that there is an opportunity for people to be more empathetic and to lean in and to listen. And, you know, a little trick I learned over the years is that when somebody comes at you with a position that's completely counter to what you believe in, instead of going right at them and going, that's BS, what I've started doing is, you could be right, and are you open to hear my opinion? So acknowledging them, like the biggest problem right now between, let's say, Democrats and Republicans is there's a general lack of acknowledgement. You know, I think we can all agree the Republicans aren't all wrong and the Democrats aren't all wrong. There's probably some right between both of them. If we could have a little bit more discourse around, you know what, you could be right, and I also have a point of view I'd love to share. Individually, if we can do that more, as leaders, if we can do that more, I think we just get a lot more out of it.
Perfect. Howard Chang, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. This has been a delightful conversation. Again, you can find Howard at theturnlab.com and at justboardrooms.com. Again, Howard Chang, thank you so much. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk with you soon.
Thanks so much, Tim.
Once again, my thanks to Howard Chang for joining us on this week's episode. And thank you so much for listening. I want to remind you, you can find the show notes for this episode, as well as an archive of all past episodes, by going to timpeter.com/podcast. Again, that's timpeter.com/podcast. Just look for episode 416. Don't forget that you can click on the subscribe link in any of the episodes that you find there to have Thinks Out Loud delivered to your favorite podcatcher every single week. You can also find Thinks Out Loud on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, anywhere fine podcasts are found. I would also very much appreciate it if you could provide a positive rating or review for the show whenever you use your preferred service. If you like what you hear on Thinks Out Loud, if you enjoy what we talk about, if you like being part of the community that we're building here, please give us a positive rating or review. Reviews help other listeners find the podcast. Reviews help other listeners understand what Thinks Out Loud is all about. They help to build our community, and they mean the world to me. So thank you so much for doing that. I very, very much appreciate it. You can also find Thinks Out Loud on LinkedIn by going to linkedin.com/TimPeterAndAssociates. You can find me on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it this week by using the Twitter handle @TCPeter. And of course, you can email me by sending an email to podcast@TimPeter.com. Again, that's podcast@TimPeter.com. Finally, and I know I say this a lot, but I want you to know how thrilled I am that you keep listening to what we do here. It means so much to me. You are the reason we do this show. You're the reason that Thinks Out Loud happens every single week. So please keep your messages coming on LinkedIn. Keep hitting me up on Twitter, sending things via email. I love getting a chance to talk with you, to hear what's going on in your world, and to learn how we can do a better job building on the types of content and community and information and insights that work for you and work for your business. So with all that said, I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day. I hope you have a wonderful week ahead, and I will look forward to speaking with you here on Thinks Out Loud next time. Until then, please be well, be safe, and as always, take care, everybody.